May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to Attention, Please on KPTZ Port Townsend. I'm Larry Stein. This week I've had the good fortune to have extended conversations with the founders and program manager of Olympic Angels, our community-supported foster care organization. Olympic Angels is a local affiliate of a national network of regional angels organizations. The organization offers support to its branches, and our Olympic Angels is one of the few not in a large urban area. The founder here in Port Townsend was Morgan Hanna. Its first board president was Ian Hanna. Here's Morgan Hanna.
I call it community-supported foster care. And so the idea is that there are very few of us that are positioned to become foster parents. That is going to fall on a few, but I believe that there's something each of us can do to make the foster care system less harming and more supportive of a developing child. And before this, we didn't really have a way that ordinary people like you and I could participate in foster care solutions unless we were going to become a licensed foster right. parent. So this gives everybody in the community a role they can play in kind of filling in the gaps left by a pretty broken foster system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can think of it when volunteers provide that wraparound care to a family, they're becoming like proxy family. They're sort of a collection of aunties and uncles mm-hmm. that are playing these really key developmental and supportive roles that otherwise just aren't there in the typical foster family setup. Mm-hmm.
We go to foster families, which are often kinship relatives. So people that have their grandbabies or nieces and nephews in foster care. We also go to licensed homes and we'll say to them, what have you not been able to do for yourself since your kids came home? What did you think this was going to be like versus what is this like? What would be the kinds of things if you had a supportive community around you that they could do to make your home healthier and happier? And we get very specific answers from different families because every family is different and their needs are different. And those answers drive the kind of volunteer group we go looking for. So we take what they tell us about their needs and we go and find people in the community that actually have those giftings or have time. And we match those two things together. Mm-hmm. So we find people in the community that will walk alongside the family for a minimum of a year. And they do all kinds of different things for different families.
Yeah. The program model is kind of dirt simple. Angels really only does one thing, and that's recruit, vet, train, and support volunteers. And we do it through two different programs. One's called Love Box. That's kind of a larger group of volunteers supporting a whole family. It's sort of a metaphor for being the container to hold that family, making sure that everything is working for the foster mother, for the foster father, for biological kids, and most importantly, for the kid in care. That in particular, that someone in that Love Box is developing in the ideal, developing a relationship with the kid in care such that if they move into a different situation, if they go back to their biological parents or they go into a new foster home, there's some relational consistency, right? That's what we really lose here. If kids fall out of care on the Olympic Peninsula, they're typically moved completely out of their communities. And they'll go to Bremerton or
Spokane.
Olympia or Vancouver or Spokane mm-hmm. to a group home. And that's where things really start to spiral downward.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people must come to you. The first instinct is if you're supporting foster care, people may come to you wanting to become foster parents. And that is not what you do. You're not a recruiter for foster parents.
Yeah, I think this is one of the knock-on benefits of these programs is that that's exactly what happens. Somebody who is moving towards this idea of maybe one day I would like to foster, if we put them in our programs up front and personal where they can mentor under another existing foster parent, it moves them further into understanding the behaviors of children that come from early trauma. It helps kind of prepare the ground for figuring out, okay, maybe only one child, maybe only up to two, kind of starting to figure out in their own brain what would work sustainably for them. And it moves them further into involvement, or it shows them early that fostering is not for them. And both of those are successes, because what we do need in this area that we do not have is a way for people to become more involved in moving into this idea of, can I one day foster? We need more licensed homes. And that's something we're really, frankly, very, very short on. And so we have seen people in these programs get up front and personal in that supportive role and then go on to become licensed homes and also become emergency respite and short-term homes for children when suddenly there's a removal. Because if there's a relationship in place and that child suddenly is pulled from that foster home, then there is somebody safe in the community they can go stay with while the department figures out what's next. So it's provided both a network and a pipeline, a way for somebody to become a foster parent. Also a way that by the time they do become a foster parent, they're more equipped and they're more ready for that role. And then it's also created a natural buffer and respite for that child, because the child has other adults that they know really well that they can then go stay with for doing a natural form of respite.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I've seen happen again and again is somebody who thinks they may never foster, if they are matched with a kid in our programs, let's say his name is John, and you get to know John and you start to love John and you see what John is going through and you also see where you fit in John's life, you may never think about adopting from foster care or you may never think about fostering yourself, but if suddenly John needs a home, that's a very different idea than would I become a foster parent. So I've seen people step into both adoption roles and fostering roles because they know that kid, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. it's not would I foster, but mm-hmm. it's could I parent John? That's mm-hmm. a very different thing.
I think I need a better definition of the Love Box program, because yes. in looking at your website, it looks like a gift box that's brought over to the child.
That's right.
But it sounds like it's a lot more than yes. just a box of
gifts. I was going to say, we ordered Love Boxes when we first started, and we've used very few. So yes, it can be a cardboard box that says Love Box on it. I would say those are critical for families where they weren't expecting to foster, so kinship families. Like in the beginning, we will ask a grandma, what's your dish soap? Would that be helpful to have paper towels and diapers and those kinds of things? And we get all of her brands. And so in the beginning, the box can be the conduit to getting the relationship started, because you come with the box and there's something in it for the grandma. There's also something in it for the grandpa. There's something in there for everybody. And it's a way to kind of get in the door. Eventually, there's no box. Yeah. And I would say most of ours even don't even start with a box. It's more like, could we bring Friday night meal? So yeah. Love Box is a symbol of a group supporting the family holistically.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's much more than the box.
It's
which
way
you see as an object.
Beyond the box. Yeah. Yes.
The box is just the metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So in Love Box, we typically take a group of people that already know each other. So like a book club is great, a rowing club, people that already have a connection to one another, but there is one person or a couple people that say, hey, let's do this. So they want to deepen their relationship with one another by volunteering together. So we take that volunteer group and we match them with the family, and they are the Love Box for that family. And if you're doing Love Box well, you don't bring a Love Box or give a Love Box to your family, but you're in a Love Box with the family. And there's that moment you see that happen. In the beginning, it starts out like, oh, we give you a Love Box. And then there's a moment where it's like, oh, this is our Love Box. And everybody's in it together.
The ideal we're always shooting for is that if a new family becomes a licensed foster home or knows that they're going to get a kinship placement, we want to get them a Love Box before it even happens. That's the ultimate ideal. And we've been able to do that in a number of situations. And man, what a difference it makes, because quite frankly, fostering is, it's the hardest job in the world. Mm-hmm. So having support around that is just huge. And, you know, when we actually tally up the hours, we're talking about, you know, over 30 hours a month of volunteer time per family. And, you know, you can imagine in your life, if you had someone helping you 30 hours a month, the difference it would make in your life. right? That's a lot of time.
When I first started doing this work, I was talking to a foster parent, and she had been doing this for a number of years. She took primarily babies, but whenever she had to go do an appointment with her other child or she needed a break, they would take one of the babies or toddlers that she was fostering. And the only way to do respite with that toddler is they would put a toddler in the back of a transporter's car. So that's somebody who's paid to transport that child. And they would transport the child to the nearest respite home. But sometimes that respite home could be as far away as Olympia, or it could be as far away as Forks. And they would take that child and they would take them there for a week or a weekend. And you can picture if you did that with your own toddler, how would they experience? They are being transported by somebody they don't know. They're taken to another foster home they don't know. They don't have a way of knowing if they're coming back or when they're coming back. So they experience it as another foster placement. Then that maybe that foster home also sends their children to daycare during the day. So maybe that child also goes to an unknown daycare. And then we transport that child back when we're done by another transporter. Right. So how are the behaviors of that toddler going to be when you get that toddler back in that foster home? How are the behaviors going to be when they try to do an overnight with their dad if they're trying to reunify? So we were taking a situation that was already bad and we were putting dysfunction on top of it. Things we would never do to our own children, we were doing to children that had suffered abuse and neglect. So what we've done is when we create a love box around a family, they can create natural respite for that foster parent. So if she has to go and be in the hospital with another child or she needs a week, that love box can take the child. Somebody who already knows the child, they can practice an overnight. We can get the child ready. We can create all the things to make that child comfortable so that child knows these people. Mm-hmm. And the child doesn't experience it as another placement. They experience it just like our kids would if they went and stayed with extended family.
I think the good parallel you say is it's like you have a great aunt who comes
yes.
over, or you trust your aunt and your uncle and your other extended family. They become extended family.
That's right.
Well, in America, right, all of our connections to our extended families are disparate. Our extended families are all over the country. So this is a way of sort of bringing that in artificially. And it's so interesting because you start to get people interacting outside of their normal subcultures, mm-hmm. you know, across subcultures and across politics and religion and all the other sort of, you know, chasms in society. It starts to create a new kind of community fabric and pluralism.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been hearing Morgan Hanna, founder and executive director, and Ian Hanna, the founding board president of Olympic Angels here in Port Townsend. This is Attention Please on KPTZ Port Townsend. I'm Larry Stein. Morgan and Ian connected me with Ari Patterson, the program manager for Olympic Angels and a veteran foster parent. I talked to her at her home in the hour before she had to go pick up the kids at school.
And it's been a beautiful full circle. I was served by Olympic Angels Love Box program through my entirety of being a foster parent, as well as now being on staff and seeing the programs from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you think about all of the different entities in play of foster community, you have the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and they really serve as the guardian of the youth. And then you have foster parents that care for the youth 24/7. You also have all of their service providers, mental health included, et cetera, for the youth. But there really wasn't anybody that came alongside the entire family to act as a natural support. You think in regular families, you have a set of parents, and then you might have extended family, their parents as grandparents. And a lot of foster families, the work that we do on a day-to-day basis is not only extremely exhausting, there's a lot of requirements involved, but it is 24/7 parenting children that may have higher behaviors because of trauma. So there was a gap somewhere between the support to the family and the kids when they're in this out-of-home placement. And that's where Angels comes in. We see ourselves at Angels as a different piece that we can add to help support the family instead of being a part of that system. It's not bureaucratic. We don't have to say no because of this, that, or the other. We can say yes when most every other entity says no.
You said that you benefited from the Angels as a foster family before you became a partner and working with them, right?
Yes.
So how did they help your family?
Well, so we were the pilot family. So before my husband and I were even licensed as foster parents, Morgan Hanna, the founder of Olympic Angels, came alongside us and said, we want to change this. Can we try and do that with you? And we didn't know what that looked like. I don't think she even knew what that looked like at the time. And this was back in 2019. And she said, well, just if you trust me, let me walk alongside you and see what happens here in the community. And so I did. I said, okay. And she gathered all these people and she called them this love box. And so they showed up every single time for us. There were times that I had a youth in my home climbing the walls and putting holes in my doors. And I could call somebody at 8 o'clock at night, whereas, you know, department shuts down at 5 p.m. Our only option is emergent resources like our sheriff's office and mental health after hours, which we know is very limited. So I could call somebody at 8 o'clock. Now, they didn't have to answer, but I knew I always had somebody I could call. I had a phone number, which is very different. And a lot of times they did answer and they listened to me. And that was sometimes all I needed was just to say, I don't know what I'm doing, because I didn't. I mean, it's not like you are an expert at parenting and go into it. It's something you want to do to help. So they supported us through 3.5 years. We had 23 kids in and out of our home in that time. And they did phenomenal things I didn't even think were possible. One, you know, they had a liability and confidentiality waiver. So I felt comfortable that I could share what I was going through when normally it's really lonely. You're not allowed to tell these kids stories. And it's not that I was telling stories. I just needed somebody to hear me what I was going through that day. So there was that aspect. But not only that, but they were so creative in finding ways to support me. It wasn't like they just showed up with stuff. The last thing we need. They showed up in meaningful ways. I had a time where I was just in tears over court. I couldn't handle one more court decision on behalf of my kids. So one of the members said, look, I love court. I love notes. Can I just sit in for you and take notes and give it to you so that you can digest it when you have a moment? I said, absolutely. So I didn't have to show up. I didn't have to listen to the heartbreaking stories that were on court. And I had somebody who just delivered me the information in a way that I could digest it when I could digest it. Our number one clients, if you will, which I don't like that word, is our volunteers. Mm-hmm. So I'm paid to then empower and introduce these volunteers into the community and wrap them into these families. So secondary is the family and the youth that we serve. Obviously, that is the goal of our programs, to impact their lives in meaningful ways. But my job, coordinating all of the volunteers on the ground level, matching them well with the right families for their to support them, and then ultimately building this and growing it. I mean, that's the third line, right?
Yeah.
What we are growing here locally, because it's important to us in our rural, small, tight-knit community, that we invest the time into people because we know that that's where we can create change. And so we see our volunteers are serving our families sometimes 8 times over what other chapters have their volunteers committed to. We're not saying that's better. It's just what we do here on our ground level to make change in our rural community. Mm-hmm. And that's important. It's so necessary, and what we're doing is so groundbreaking that we know we're changing those statistics over time. We don't see it necessarily year to year, but we will see it down the stream in 20 years when our statistics locally have changed, right? Mm-hmm. There's less continuation, generational traumas and foster care, because that's really what it is here locally.
When you think about the stories of foster kids getting through the system and getting to young adulthood and having had 25 placements in their youth or more.
Oh, I lived it. I'm a former foster youth as well.
So you lived that experience of bouncing around. And
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so hard.
It is hard. But we can change that. It doesn't have to be hard, and we don't have to be former foster youth. I mean, I use that label for myself, but we don't have to be that. We can be program managers in a nonprofit to change it.
Exactly.
We can do all of the other things.
That's true.
Ari Patterson, program manager for Olympic Angels, the community-supported foster care organization here in Port Townsend. Now we'll go back to Morgan Hanna, executive director of Olympic Angels.
Our second program is Dare to Dream. And Dare to Dream is a lot like Love Box. It's a walk alongside program. It is a year commitment at minimum, but it is for older youth who are likely going to age out of foster care, or they're anywhere in that like teenager to young adult part of their life. And it gives them somebody one-on-one who shows up for them consistently. And the number one goal of Dare to Dream is trust, right? Having somebody in this with you. Because when you talk to kids who grew up in foster care, they will tell you they just felt very, very alone. They might have had a lot of brothers and sisters in their foster homes, but they didn't have somebody that was consistently there for them just because they adored them, right? Because they really valued them. And so Dare to Dream gives you that one-on-one mentorship with an adult, a healthy adult, who will walk alongside a young person in the foster care system. And they work with them on a number of milestones. We actually have 10 milestones. Things like housing, where are you going to live after you're not in this foster home anymore? Do you have your driver's license? How are you going to get your driving hours? Do you have an adult to drive with? How about, do you have a bank account? Have you ever opened one? Do you know how to access and find your check balance on your phone? So these are the kinds of things our mentors do, because we know that the outcomes for children after they exit the foster care system are bleak. About half of these children will end up homeless. We know that you are more likely, if you've been in foster care, to either wind up in prison or on the streets without a home than you are to go to college. Mm-hmm. That's not acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know that half of them won't graduate high school.
Yeah.
When we first started this program here, we started following four young girls as they were aging out of foster care. And to see what happened to each of these girls just was a really clear indicator that what we see nationally happening to children in foster care was happening to our local kids as well. So this one-on-one mentorship provides you somebody in your corner who breathes life and hope into you, and also helps you figure out kind of the practicalities of how you're going to fill out this form, how you're going to not just get a job, but keep a job.
Right.
Right.
So what are you in need of at this point? Volunteers? Money?
Monthly donors are the thing that makes the biggest difference for us. So No, none of this happens without financial resources, and all of that, I mean, that pays for our insurance, it pays for our background checks, it pays for our case managers that do the matching and supporting.
Mm-hmm.
If I am doing my job well, I am hiring case managers to get families into our program. So that takes money. So we have a program called the Angel Alliance, and some people give as little as $5 a month. We have a couple people that give $250 a month. And when you add all that together, that takes a big amount of the burden off of our organization to fundraise, which means we can spend more time getting families into our programs, right? So financial support is number one. I would say number two is invested board members. Our board has been at this since the beginning, pretty much. We have really invested incredible working board members, but I want them to be able to cycle off when they're ready.
Right.
And that will not happen unless I'm cycling new people on all the time. So people that are bringing their professional world, like people that have done spreadsheets and budget projections and don't mind chipping in to write a grant, those folks are invaluable to us, because then we can focus staff time on the other things. Would you answer that any different? Would you say we're in need of more?
Right now we're in need of a couple case managers. That's, you know, the main thing on my mind.
That's a hiring thing.
That's been the hardest part of this business is hiring the people that can hold the families and volunteers and will, you know, that they want to stay and they want to grow the program. Because if you have a case manager and they stay for a year, then we're almost replicating what the foster care system does, where there's that turnover where this is your case manager.
Right.
Trust them, get to know them, and then, oh, here's your new case manager.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that.
Yeah.
We would like to have committed.
So what is the background of a case manager? What is it? Who's a good candidate to be a case manager?
Our very best case manager, she was in foster care herself, and she has been a foster parent. It's not an educational thing.
No.
It's a hungry, humble, smart with hustle.
Yeah. Morgan likes to joke that a real estate agent would probably be a great case manager.
Yeah, a relationship builder that's a passionate pursuer of people.
So it's not necessarily an educational background or a license of any sort.
Oh, my goodness, no. Yeah. Because most of what you're in is the relationship business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a professional job with a good salary and benefits that doesn't require that sort of thing. It really requires behavioral characteristics.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone being entrepreneurial, taking initiative.
Discipline.
Somebody who can go out and find out who are the foster families we haven't met yet. Mm-hmm. And then going out and talking to people, right. Tell me who have we not met yet? And then
it's a form of village matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Ian and Morgan Hanna, the founders of Olympic Angels. We also heard from their program manager and veteran foster parent, Ari Patterson. Thanks to all of them for talking with us. Also thanks to Michael D'Alessandro for suggesting that I speak with him about Olympic Angels. Olympic Angels can be reached at olympicangels.org. Their website has a number of videos and articles about their activities, opportunities, and fundraising. Their phone number is 360-207-4664. Please is a production of KPTZ Port Townsend. Podcasts of the programs are on kptz.org. Click the KPTZ podcast link, and Attention Please is one of the first programs you'll find. Coordinating producer of Attention Please is Jim Burke. I'm Larry Stein, producer of today's program. Thanks for listening to Attention Please on KPTZ.